This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, January 14th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, environmental activists and community members rallied outside of the state capitol yesterday during the governor's annual speech to call for concrete policies to mitigate climate change. In our latest installment in the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Fossil Fuel Transition Series, we'll hear about a Durango firm making energy-efficient building materials from timber felled during fire mitigation. And we'll have our regular Friday feature, .org. At 8:30, connections will come your way. As always, the phone lines will be open and your calls welcome. Then at 9:30, Meredith Carson will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Most areas of Louisville should have running water by Tuesday. That's according to city officials who hosted a meeting yesterday for residents affected by the Marshall Fire. When water pressure is back, the city will test water quality at individual homes. For now, the city will continue to fill bulk water tanks. Boulder County has dumpsters available today and Saturday in fire-damaged neighborhoods for area residents to throw out spoiled food. Right-of-way cleanup efforts begin today to remove fire-damaged and destroyed obstacles, like downed trees, from roadways and sidewalks. Vehicles will go to a staging location to check VIN numbers. Officials expect the work to take 2 to 4 weeks to complete. Louisville City Council members expressed concern at their meeting Thursday that few residents have filled out a right-of-entry form to opt in or opt out of the debris removal program. Property owners in fire-affected areas are urged to submit forms as soon as possible to allow specialists to remove hazardous materials on properties and to apply mulch to the soil to prevent ash from becoming airborne or spreading into waterways. The deadline for turning in the form is Wednesday, January 26. More information is available at bouldercounty.org. Governor Jared Polis began his State of the State address Thursday with a moment of silence for Coloradans lost last year to COVID, violent crimes, and the recent Marshall Fire. He expressed his gratitude for those who helped the community during these crises and emphasized his hope for Colorado's future. Polis said saving Coloradans' money and keeping living costs affordable are top priorities. He proposed offering greater physical and mental health services, especially for children impacted by the pandemic. And he restated his goal to reduce crime rates. The governor touched upon efforts related to climate change, such as reducing emissions, updating the state's water plan, and using newer firefighting technology. But according to the Colorado Sun, protesters outside the Capitol and some Democratic lawmakers felt that not enough focus was placed on climate change. Colorado is one of 39 states to benefit from a $1.85 billion settlement with student loan servicer Navient. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Attorney General Phil Weiser announced Thursday that the state's payout will provide complete debt relief for over 1,300 Colorado student loan borrowers and $260 each in restitution to nearly 7,000 others. The Colorado Newsline reports that the settlement comes after what Weiser's office said was widespread, unfair, deceiving, and exploitive student loan servicing practices. A multi-state lawsuit against Navient alleges that the company guided borrowers who faced financial hardship into long-term forbearance, where they did not have to make payments, but interest still accrued on the loan. When student borrowers are unable to make payments on their loans, they are supposed to have options, including switching to income-driven repayment plans, which set payments based on a borrower's income. Navient also allegedly issued subprime loans to students attending for-profit schools and schools with low graduation rates. Navient denied the allegations, and it did not admit to wrongdoing as part of the settlement. Borrowers who are affected by the settlement will receive notice later this year and should make sure their address is updated with the Federal Student Aid Office. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Kroger, the parent company of King Soopers, agreed Thursday to resume negotiations with striking union members. At a rally Thursday, Kim Cordoba, president of the Local 7 union, announced that the union had told the company it was willing to return to the bargaining table. However, picket lines continue, with many of the almost 8,500 Denver metro area workers on strike. Employees say they want fair pay, a safer workplace, and affordable health care. Tonight is the last chance to see the Boulder Star, a seasonal landmark shining at night from the mountainside. The Boulder Chamber and the City of Boulder continued its illumination past the usual January 2nd turnoff date to symbolize sympathy for the Marshall Fire victims as well as appreciation for first responders. Officials agreed to turn off the lights now to protect the habitat of nesting raptors nearby. There's a chance of rain, snow, and some gusty winds this morning and early afternoon throughout the Front Range. Up to half an inch of snow is possible. In Boulder, the high is near 38 but is expected to drop to 29, with lows in the evenings around 14. In Denver, highs in the upper 30s and evening temps around 15. In Fort Collins, there's a slight chance of rain and snow today with a high near 43 and a low around 14. Winds could gust as high as 38 miles per hour. Outside the Boulder studios, it's around 39 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Governor Jared Polis gave his State of the State address yesterday. The annual speech drew a crowd of environmental activists and community members to call on the governor to put climate change at the front and center of his agenda this legislative session. Among them was Shayna Oliver, enrolled member of the Navajo Nation and a mother who lives in the Denver metro area.
Yes, this rally is to really push Governor Polis to declare a climate emergency for Colorado, and that we want him to be a stronger leader when it comes to climate action and to be here for our families of Colorado. We're experiencing a lot of homelessness, and we just had recent fires that are going to put more of a strain on affordable housing for families that have been here for generations that are being pushed out of the state due to this administration not taking action for families and labor workers, essential workers, like you see at King Soopers and what's going on with the union workers. We are the people that make communities viable, because if it weren't for labor workers, like, people would not be operating the way they are right now.
By declaring a climate emergency, what opportunities would that provide?
Creating new opportunities. We need new jobs. We need to think about restoring justice to our communities, restoring environmental justice into our communities that are being impacted, especially like in Commerce City area, northeast Denver, west side of Denver, which gets neglected a lot on maintenance. People of Commerce City can't use their water to cook or drink. Everyone should have access to clean water, clean air. Suncor shouldn't be allowed to pollute into the South Platte River. They shouldn't be allowed to push and dump PFAS into the South Platte River or Sand Creek River. And this administration needs to take real action and be bold enough to stand by what they said. They were going to take the climate crisis serious, and he hasn't really been that leadership behind that, and we're asking for him to be that leadership that that he ran on that campaign. And it's fraudulent for him to not actually put forth climate action and bringing in sustainable jobs to phase out fossil fuels, because we've seen that fossil fuels is part of the problem of exacerbating our wildfires, exacerbating our air quality problems, exacerbating the clean water issues that we have, and as well as this drought. If it wasn't for the drought, that fire would have never got as big as it got. And then with the extreme droughts, this is the case. We're going to continue seeing more fires. We're going to continue seeing more poor air quality days. And they haven't mitigated these things since being in office. And we've been working on these issues for decades.
That was Shayna Oliver speaking with KGNU's Dave Ashton at yesterday's climate rally on the steps of the state capitol. One of the speakers at the rally was abolitionist Elizabeth Epps.
We know, and we just saw recently with the tragedy of the Marshall Fire, that crisis and tragedy exacerbates inequality, right? So the places in our state that are already suffering the most, climate emergency is impacting those folks even worse, right? And so I'm here to talk about those things, to talk about the importance of, when we say environmental justice, the emphasis for me is on the justice part, right? We're not doing right by the earth unless we're doing right by all of our neighbors on it. So that's what I'm here for. Glad to be here in community on this ridiculously warm January day. It's a lovely day, but it should be April or May.
I notice a lot of the signage and everything that we're seeing here is really calling directly on Governor Polis to make some substantial changes. What are your thoughts about what could the governor be doing differently right now?
So I join with the folks here who have the specific demands of him, right? They're using that short verbiage of SAD, the S-A-D. One, to stop with the S, to stop issuing new permits for fracking. The A, the second component, being to acknowledge that climate injustice is disproportionately harming communities of color. And then that third prong, that third ask, relates to the D in SAD, declaring a true crisis emergency. Those are not high asks. Those are fairly low asks. We know that it's going to be, how can I say it? They're big asks for this governor, but they shouldn't be. I like our governor a lot. He moves at the pace, though, of business when it relates to climate change. And moving at that pace, the pace that capitalism and business interests dictate, that should be a factor. A big factor, but it shouldn't be the determining factor. We can't wait for business interests to decide it's time to act on climate change. That's what our governor has been doing, and so we need to do two things. We need to both push him to reroute, right, on this day where he's giving his state of the state, but we also have to recognize that we're in this for the long haul, right? This work is beyond this session, beyond this year. So yes, we're calling upon our current governor, Governor Polis, but he's going to have a successor. Right? And so we're teeing it up for his successor. We're teeing it up for the other legislators in this building that this is what community is demanding. This is what we're asking for. And those asks are simple ones.
So for people who would like to support, what would you suggest for action steps for everyday listeners?
That's a good question. I deeply believe in following the people who are doing the work. One of the things that's so exciting about today's rally is it's a true coalition effort, right? There's dozens. You know them. There's dozens of groups who are involved here. So I would encourage people to go to the social media, the websites of 350 Colorado, of the other organizations. Particularly, I'm going to ask people to follow the lead of the Black and Brown and Indigenous-led organizations. They've been working on this work for generations. This is not new to them, right? So they've laid the asks out. One of the asks was to be here today. I'll also offer this. It's important as individual community members that we make certain life choices with regarding our own consumption, our own use, our own travel habits. Those things matter, but I do believe we've been sold a bill of goods to suggest that climate change is the responsibility of individuals alone. It's not. So when we're thinking about that answer, your question was a good one, what can we do, right? My answer is we should follow the work of the Black and Brown and Indigenous organizers who are telling us what to do, but also give ourselves some grace. Right? There's, while we're making choices about things like do we drive or do we use straws or do we compost, I think that the real benefit in those things is their collective action, but also because it keeps us attached to the work we're doing. But we should never, ever, ever let big corporations off the hook, right? It's their actions and their decisions, their tax benefits. It's their behavior that is really driving the crisis we're in. And so we have to push on them to redirect it.
What are you going to be doing on Monday for Martin Luther King Jr. holiday?
So I am going to, I'm going to be doing a few things, some private, some public, but I'm certainly going to join in the Marade. A few years ago, actually, be more specific, in 2019, I was the keynote speaker at the Marade. And I will say it's delightful to be back as just an attendee. It is much less nerve-wracking. But of course, it's, given what we've been through in the past couple years, it's a wonderful opportunity to fellowship. And we can't mention Martin Luther King Jr. without recognizing that he cared deeply about our earth and environment, climate justice. He cared about workers, right? And so in addition to being present at the Marade, I'm going to be using my voice online and off to lift up the things that he was killed for fighting for, which was working for marginalized people, working for sanitation workers, working for janitors, working against the war. That's the work he was doing. And I fear that in the decades since his death, he's become too whitewashed, this comfortable symbol. So what I'll be doing is I'll be out and be present, I'll be in community, and at every opportunity I'll be reminding folks what that young man who didn't even live to see 40, right, what he died fighting for.
That was Elizabeth Epps speaking with KGNU's Dave Ashton. Of course, some communities are already coming up with their own ways to transition away from the use of fossil fuels. And KGNU is featuring their stories as part of a collaboration with other Rocky Mountain community radio stations. We go now to the next installment of the reporting series. As the climate continues to dry and warm across Colorado, fire mitigation efforts such as forest thinning are becoming more important. But the wood often ends up in a landfill or burned or otherwise wasted. One company in Durango is working to change that. KSUT's Sarah Flower visited their facility to learn more.
Timber Age Systems Incorporated is the first producer of cross-laminated timber, or CLT, in the Southwest. CLT was developed in Europe over 20 years ago as a replacement for steel and concrete walls, floors, and ceilings in large-scale buildings. It's made by gluing boards together in alternating layers at right angles to one another. And what makes TimberAge unique in their CLT process is that they use 3-inch ponderosa pine that's been sourced from fire mitigation on both public and private lands. This technique is more often used in urban settings. Andy Hawk, one of the co-founders of TimberAge and his team, work diligently in a small facility located in a remote area of Durango while they develop a system of how to create more CLT buildings in rural settings.
What we've been working on is how do you shrink the whole process to be able to use smaller trees from fire mitigation, beetle-killed material, substandard saw logs, things that don't sort of meet the commercial needs for dimensional lumber, for 2x4s and 2x6s and 2x8s. We're trying to use that material that isn't used in those processes. And so we've had to sort of shrink the traditional form factor for cross-laminated timber. But what it opens up is the ability to use this material in smaller buildings that are more common in rural communities.
The evidence of the efficiency for CLT is mounting in some of the bigger settings, but Hawk says that information is still needed for these small-scale projects.
It's been proven dramatically that CLT-based buildings can have environmental performance that are 70 to 80% more efficient. So it requires far less energy to heat and cool and maintain an environment within the structure. It's also been demonstrated that solid wood mass timber buildings have higher air quality within the building themselves. But that's been at a very urban scale. And there are no data to demonstrate how that looks at the rural scale. And so we're climbing that hill right now.
Part of that uphill battle is the need to build more. TimberAge has received an over $400,000 grant from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment Recycling Resources Economic Opportunity Program to build a nearly 3,000 square foot facility in La Plata County that Hawk says could expand the company's capacity nearly four times what it is now and help increase their use of locally harvested ponderosa pine.
The vision for growth behind TimberAge is to find communities and partners that are interested in having sort of a micro manufacturing facility that works directly with them in their community and with their forest. So yes, we believe we're ready to grow. The grant that we just received from CDPHE is gonna allow us to build our own CLT-based factory and quadruple our current production, but that's about as big as we see ourselves getting right here in Durango. And so then is it a facility in Montezuma County, or is it a facility in the San Luis Valley, or somewhere further up the Western Slope? And we're talking with an organization in California that, from an environmental, like an actual ecosystem standpoint and a forest standpoint, is not all that different than Southwest Colorado, about the potential to build a plant in the Northern Sierra.
Hawk says that designing and building with integrative CLT system can offer 40% faster assembly with 25% less expenses and is net zero ready. Part of the success of TimberAge for Hawk in adopting these new systems is not only a learning curve, but also partnering with innovative professionals, local builders, architects, all while working closely with the U.S. and Colorado Forest Service. Reporting for KSUT News, I'm Sarah Flower.
That story is part of a collaboration between stations of the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition. Reports will highlight the transition from fossil fuels across the Mountain West. Listen in the coming weeks for more stories from our partner stations. Time now for .org, our regular Wednesday feature, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
I'm Stacey Johnson with KGNU.org. Junkyard Social Club, a Boulder hangout that welcomes adults and kids alike, is now open for programs and events, with full operations expected soon. Jill Katzenberger, executive director, explains more.
Junkyard Social Club is Boulder's newest venue for creative play. It is part adventure playground, part rebel museum, and part coffee shop. Oftentimes people are like, what is an adventure playground? An adventure playground is a space that is designed for unrestricted creative play. So there are structures and forts and tunnels to explore, but there are also loose materials like pipes and pots and pans and ropes and pulleys that anyone can build and create and tinker with. We see these materials as inspirations for whatever anyone wants to create.
Whose idea or vision was Junkyard Social Club?
Well, it all started with a small group of us local parents, makers, educators that came together to think about why Boulder didn't have a hands-on discovery museum. And so we toured places all around the country. We talked to folks around here to figure out what people wanted, and we realized that Boulder needed a space that wasn't the, like, once a year I'll go and check it out, you know, check off that box kind of place, but the space that you'd want to come back to multiple times a month, where it would become your hangout space, where you'd feel sort of a sense of ownership over it. And so the concept expanded in lots of different directions, but finally we honed it in on Junkyard Social Club. The Junkyard Social Club was created by local people, local artists, educators. We hope that by reimagining the use and purpose of different things, we can inspire that level of creativity in those that come into the space. And maybe they use that inspiration to repurpose something in their own life, or maybe they use that inspiration to create something new here.
So it sounds like you have soft opened, but expect to be fully operational by the spring. But what is Junkyard Social Club offering in the meantime?
Right now, we're offering classes, workshops, and have lots of different opportunities for families to drop in and play in the space. Folks should check the website, junkyardsocialclub.org, for all the latest opportunities to come and hang out in the space. And hopefully in the next few months, we'll have just regular public open hours where you could drop in kind of during that set 9-to-5 time frame and pay admission similar to a children's museum.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dotorg.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Steve Miller, Dave Ashton, Sarah Flower, Stacey Johnson, and Rosanna Longobetter for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Connections just after this news update from the BBC.